Mic check, mic check, mic check. Alrighty, friends, we have a new episode today. This is an interview with my good friend Joshua Martin from Joshua Martin Studios. He does corporate video for the University of Notre Dame. Very like high profile type of content for the entire university. Or at least for certain parts of the university. He also is a freelance filmmaker for his company, Joshua Martin Studios. A really cool podcast with him talking about balancing the corporate side of work with the freelance side of work. We talk about pre-production to production to post-production, the lighting to the tools he uses, and also his thoughts on filmmaking in general. And so I think you guys will really enjoy this podcast today. Other than that, we have some more episodes coming out in the woodwork, some more interviews I'm trying to line up, and also just informational and hopefully inspiring content for you guys as we start to kind of figure out what the rest of this year is looking like for all of us freelancers. Alrighty, that being said, let's go ahead and get into the episode with Joshua Martin. Well, dude, Josh, thank you again for coming on to the podcast. Really, really appreciate Absolutely. It all. Can you tell our audience a little bit about yourself? Who you are and sort of how you got started in visual arts.
Sure, I'll try to condense it because I'm a long-winded talker. But I'm Joshua Martin. I'm based right now in the Midwest, so South Bend, Indiana. And this whole journey started way early in, my middle school, high school years. I was super interested in photography. My dad had a camera and all that good stuff, all that jazz. I taught myself. I, started taking pictures of nature, whatnot, and then started picking up books. And then my parents just kept feeding into my interest in it. So that kind of started my visual journey. I did that all the way through high school. And then I was like, I want to take photography as my major, fine art photography. So I went to college for it. Then like my sophomore year, basically, my university introduced documentary of film program. And I was kind of bored of photography because I felt like I was advancing a little quickly. And I just jumped in. The professor there, man, I love him to death. He took me under his wing and then he just kind of said, hey, the sky's the limit. There's so much more storytelling you can do with video versus photography. And then I found that to be true for me. And so I took all the directing classes, cinematography classes, every class they offered, I took. And then eventually I got my first gig to do a documentary and travel all over the Midwest in 2015. And I've been doing that ever since. But I also picked up doing, sorry, I hear the lawnmower in the background.
It's all good. I hear it too. Yeah, it's all good. Hold for lawnmower.
This is going to be a raw take, bro. One of my first jobs coming out of college outside of doing documentary work was working with universities. And so I did have a job. I was like working with like the PR communication department here at college, but then I left the Midwest and flew down to Miami. And basically that me flying to Miami was the journey where we start to meet eventually, because that's how SLR matching, all that stuff happened. But I worked for the University of Miami doing the content creation for admissions there. That was a huge learning curve. So I was in both worlds. I was in this creative freelance world as well as this corporate educational world. And that was really like the year between 2015, 2016, that cinematic quote unquote storytelling for universities started to kind of pop off. And I was in the mix of that wave from Miami. And then just almost 2 years ago now, my wife and I moved up here to Notre Dame area, and that's where I work currently. So I have a production company, Josh Martin Studios. And this 2020 is the year actually that we're switching from like doing these side jobs, kind of pay off debt and stuff, and push towards more making documentary films, working on big budget projects, which we finally broke through in the last month, because 2020 was not what anybody expected. So that's what I do, man. I actually said that pretty fast.
that was pretty good, man. I think it's probably just having been interviewed so many times, you find a rhythm.
I think you tried to condense some things. Yeah,
exactly, man. Could you elaborate a little bit more on when you mentioned between the kind of like balancing or just being in two different worlds of like freelance and corporate? Like how are they similar in a way, but then also what are like some of the main pros that, you know, say if someone wants to do, if they're in the same situation, like maybe they're pulled in one way or the other, what are some of like the pros and cons of that?
Sure, that's a great question, because it's actually very, I struggled early on trying to balance what that looks like, because when you're working in a corporate setting, the voice that you're pushing is whoever the entity that you're working for. So the content I was creating is the voice of the university, either be Notre Dame or, you know, University of Miami. So as an artist, you know, you get that, you know, I want to tell the stories I want to tell, yada, yada, yada. But you come and hit this wall, it's like, whoa, no, you got to kind of craft that and use those skills to tell this story in this particular way. So took me a minute to kind of understand that. And I struggle with it from time to time. So that was probably the biggest difference. It's not necessarily a con. It's not for everybody, that's for sure, because some people just can't work under that type of pressure to deliver a story that they're not, you know, interested in, really. And that's where a lot of the drive of a lot of passion work comes from. Because if I'm interested in that, that's what I'm kind of gravitate toward and pour all my energy in. I've learned that there's different tiers in the corporate world of education video making, is that something we call like your low hanging fruits, where you don't have to put too much energy into it. There's just a project that you just need to get done. And there's some instances where, for instance, my department, we handle the university's commercial. So that where we put like a ton of time and resources into to make it good. And then, you know, dealing with different clients that think that their messaging is going to be best for what they want. So it's a mixed bag of things. So that's that side of that on the university side. But the upside of it is that you have a ton of opportunities to push for your development as a storyteller. So, you know, you have all the resources of the university now. You can either take classes, which I've done, or you can go through the route of like, hey, I found this online course very valuable to me, or this seminar or this convention, whatever you propose it. They say, yeah, this is going to look good for you to progress. Because they always want their employees to be like top notch, you know, in their profession. So they're going to put time into you and invest into you. So that's been the upside. So I've been able to kind of translate those opportunities and apply to what I'm doing with Josh Martin Studios. And that's been the way I've tried to balance this. Like, okay, what are the ways I can take advantage of these opportunities here, still make good work for them, but also apply to what I'm doing outside of that. And it, you know, there's ups and downs, because there's a different type of groove you have to meet. You don't have clients as ready and available as you do in the university versus outside and, you know, the freelance world. Now you have to dig a little deeper. You have to market yourself. You have to put out a portfolio, put out a reel, all those things. So you're working double time, and I'm working double time. Luckily I have a business partner trying to do those things in the freelance world, and then try to manage and work with people who actually help manage, you know, those clients and everything in that space of the education. So that's been pretty much my life for the last 5 years, really. Wow.
Yeah. And do you ever find like the need to sort of just like take time off, you know, since you are kind of double dipping in everything from the university jobs, which is also just like basically like your client, you know, and then also the freelance jobs. Do you ever feel like sometimes it's just too much and you kind of just need to take like a day or two off to just like do something else?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I have burnout moments, as we all do. And the moments where I do burn out, I'll just kind of cuddle up with my wife. I'm like, I can't do it. other times it's like, hey, let's just go just travel somewhere. Drive somewhere, get our hair clear from other things, watch movies, play video games. I'm a hardcore video game player. Right now I'm playing Pokemon Sword on the Switch. I'm just like in that. I just do other things now that we have our baby too. It's like, you know, pouring time into her, making sure she feels loved and, you know, the attention. And that's a whole nother curveball thrown into the mix of this, having a young family and then trying to build a business as well as pleasing the other entity. So that's a whole nother mixed bag of things. But it's been, so whenever I feel kind of burnt out, and one huge thing I would say though, so my wife and I, we're Christian, and the particular, our particular, belief system or the way we view the Bible, just plays into how I kind of break away from what's happening throughout the week. So 6 days we do all, you know, all we need to do, like, you know, Sunday through Friday, we're working hard. On Saturday, we consider that our Sabbath, similar to the Jews. We consider that our Sabbath, where we just don't do anything. We just stop. We stop work. We just rest. We try to recuperate, connect with God, connect with our family, and connect spiritually on that level. So that's been the main thing that's keeping me like afloat, is that having that moment, that day of rest to just stop what I'm doing and then pick it back up on Sunday and keep going. So that's really where, when I feel burnt out, I'm looking for the end of the week for that Sabbath, that Saturday for me to do that. So, that's what my life kind of looks like right now.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, there's always times where we all need, even if it's a day, to kind of just unwind, you know, especially if you've been going from like project to project to project to project. Sometimes you really just need like a day, especially as creative people, because, you know, I forget what percentage it is, but like, you know, when you're using so much brain power, it's literally taking like energy and resources from your body to actually like, go into pre-production, like doing storyboarding, doing your shot list, scouting a location, doing, a tech scout, and then having to actually go on production. Like it takes a lot of brain power and people don't know that.
Yeah. Oh man, I'll tell you this too, like being in the corporate side of things too, sometimes like your creativity is requested on demand and it doesn't always work like that. Like, I'm sure you've had moments where, the client's like, we want you to do this. Well, when you're constantly being asked, what is your creative thought on this thing? That can get draining too, because sometimes you don't allow your mind to kind of digest something. Sometimes they just kind of want, hey, what do you think about this quick? And sometimes your initial thought is like, I have no idea. And if you give a thought, it might not be the best thought because you don't have time to really think about it. So that's probably another, I guess, a downside, because people look to you to, in that world, in that way of working, they look to you to be that creative resource. And they think it's like they think it's like a switch that you had to turn on immediately. But we, you know, we're human. We're emotional. We're affected by so many other things. And so if we're not like, if our head's not cleared on that day, we can't really deliver. That's what I've learned for myself, especially.
Yeah, no, I found myself in that same situation many times, you know, whether that be like documentary or whether that be commercial film. Sometimes when the client just asks for something on the fly, you do your best with what you have, not only just from a technical perspective and also like a logistical perspective, but also sometimes, you know, you kind of have to ask yourself, well, you know, the original idea was this, but now you're asking us to do this. Like, is this still what you want, or do you want this now? You know, and if that's the case, then creatively, I have to think of this stuff like right now, because the sun's going down.
Yeah,
we only have our talent for another 2 hours. Do you want to pay more for the? You know what I mean? So
yeah, and people don't realize.
Go ahead.
Like, our profession is troubleshooting. We're problem solvers. To be creative is like working with the resources we have. And our main job is to like fix a problem, a need, right? And if you tell us to change, like if we've had discussions beforehand, pre-production, this is what it's going to be. And then in the middle of that same shoot where we all thought agreed on what it is, and you change it, our mind has to recalibrate because figure out there's a new problem now we had to figure out. So that's kind of, that's what you just say. It can be challenging. It is challenging for sure.
Essentially, when you're working for the universities, has there ever been a time where has there ever been a time where something was asked of you that was extremely challenging and you didn't know if you could pull it off with like the time and the resources that you had in the moment?
Yeah. So since my aim is being my first job coming out of, you know, university and whatnot, the job role was to, so, okay, here's quick background. So the guy that hired me, he's one of my greatest friends, Omar, shout out to you. He hired me. We worked for about like 8 months and then he left. So his job position was production manager, and he conducted all of the interviews, scheduling the students, whatever. And I was really his support when I came there. Once he left, I was left with that role. I was doing everything plus, setting up. Luckily I had my friend Christy there and Jesslyn. They're a great team. They helped out when they could. And the greatest thing I struggled with was the process of conducting a really good interview, getting the information that you needed. And this is where I really learned how to do pre-interviews and then getting the transcript back, going through the transcript, and then picking out elements that we want to kind of dive into a little bit more to craft that story on the day of the actual interview. Man, it was just really just nerves. I was so afraid of that whole process for some reason. And to this day, I still have some nerves, but I'm a lot more comfortable because I could do it more often and I know what I'm going towards. But I think what made me afraid was the unknown, or I didn't feel prepared. Even though I was going through the pre-production process, it was like that whole psychological thing. It's like, what if you look, you know, stupid asking this question, or you say too many ums, or all these other things that kind of get into your head. And that was really one thing that was very difficult for me. And later on, the later end of that, I got more comfortable with the students, talking to them, and then it took me to step forward and do more research before that, so I can feel comfortable, feel prepared, to deliver a better conversation, to get the information we need to tell a better story. So that's what it took me, more effort on the back end to get prepared and ready, and then just have an open dialogue. Whoever's with me at the time, my director was Jesslyn. She, we had a lot of conversations about what we thought about this, that, and the other. And she helped me a lot because I just watched her, how she did it, and just kind of learned from that. And I tried to apply that same thing. So yeah, that was the biggest stepping stone I needed to overcome, for sure.
Yeah, right on. Well, switching gears a little bit, I definitely want to talk about your cinematography, because I feel like it's very unique and it's very stylized, but it's also very, I think it kind of has your mark on it, you know, like a Joshua Martin mark on it. I'm looking at your website right now, and I mean, it just looks fucking awesome. Like, it looks it looks clean to me, man.
It needs a lot of updating, that's for sure.
No, trust me, we all need to update. So sometimes I just forget. It's like, oh crap, that looked really good, but that was like 6 months ago and I just forgot to put it on the website, you know? Maybe take me through, like, since, like, for like the new industry dance company promo, or any of the work for them, can you talk to me a little bit about the whole process of that, from like pre-production all the way into post?
Yeah, so working with the new dance industry company, they're a dance company here in South Bend, Indiana. My wife and I got in contact with them because we went to one of the shows. I took her on her birthday because we like that type of stuff. And I have a background with gymnastics. So anything with body movement and body translation is really interesting to me. So I was like, hey, we got to do this. So after a while, we started doing, because my wife took photos for them, and the director there, she loved it. And we started talking, hey, could you cover this show, that show? And it was really just like out of our own time, just like enjoying each other's company and enjoying the show as well. And then eventually it got down to like, hey, we want to do this big project. We want to make a film, a dance film, and you have creative insight on how you want to take the lead. Now that was an honor. At the same time, it's like, oh, I still don't know. Cause like a lot of times when we shot for them for these events, it would be my first time seeing the performance. So I was really trying to think two steps ahead, as I'm recording these live events, or if we have a moment to kind of stage something, we do that. That being said, working with dancers on this type of level, this contemporary, a little more, improvised dance routines, has opened up a lot of ways to kind of go different routes. And so through this process, I've learned to be a little bit more decisive and give more direct communication. I'm still not the greatest at it, but that's what we needed, because if you're doing something that's improv, you have to be aware of how certain cuts are going to kind of flow together. Or if you're going to do like a one take or one, or a lot of the, because we've been filming actually for the last 4 weeks, and a lot of stuff are just one-ers, because we were trying to see what would be the best angles, and then we'll go back a few more takes. And so it's been a real pleasure and a joy to work with Chloe, is her name, that's the director, because she respects me as the filmmaker, and I respect her as the director, because I don't know a lot of these like dance terms or anything like that. So we kind of rely heavily on each other to figure out what's the balance, what direction. So I tend to go to her first, say, hey, what's the idea? What's the theme? What's the what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know.
Sort of like what the actual story is.
You say what's the story? How you want to paint this? And then I kind of take that and I watch, and I just kind of sit and watch for a little bit before we start filming. And then I just kind of say, okay, maybe we can kind of go. It's literally like on the spot kind of thinking, because there's not a lot of, there is pre-production behind it, because we could talk about location, we could talk about the dress, how we want, all the other stuff. But then when it comes to like camera movement and everything, that's a whole nother thing, because the terrain kind of changes what that looks like. Because we've done stuff on sand, we've done stuff on dirt, road, like the terrain just changes all the time. And you got on the spot, it's best to be there on the spot to kind of figure out how that's all going to work. The theme for this film, this dance film, is connection. And so obviously they've kind of pivoted from, because they get most of their profit from live events. And so since they can't do any live events because of COVID, they pivot and say, hey, can we do something that's online at least, so we can still have the ability to share what this story is going to be, and then kind of tweak things along the way. So the idea is connection. So if you saw some of the screen grabs from Instagram and whatnot, they're wearing masks, of course. They're physically showing what social distancing might look like. All those kind of things that we've heard terms for this last 6 months or so, right? And so that's kind of the theme, and all the dancers create something relating to that. So connection, disconnect, love out of love. There's other things like that. Groups, right? Groups can really be together, but like they show that, but show how far they are and how they still kind of move as one body, stuff like that. I got a lot of comments saying like, oh, this looks like Midsommar. Have you seen that movie?
I've seen the thumbnail for it.
I can't still make that movie. I was like, no, don't say that. I don't like that movie. it's very gory. It's not what it is.
Right. When you're going through, since it's so improvisation, it's very, very contemporary, as you say, and things can kind of change on the fly. When it comes to pre-production, are you trying to find ways where you can like, where you're locating, where you're going through like location scouts, you're trying to find the best location to use. Mm-hmm. What's that process like with the director? Do you guys go on the location scouts together, or?
So in this case, I allowed her to do all of the, I made suggestions, and then the director went out to find locations that she wanted, and we kind of collaborated that way. One location I thought worked really well, one of the dance, one of the duets is called Disconnect, or the theme is Disconnect. And we were in an open field where these like large towers of wire towers are in the frame. And I liked that idea. And basically I sat low on the ground, pointing the camera up so we can see this idea of, you know, connection, right? Over above the composition, over the frame. But beneath, the whole dance routine, you see them trying to get close, but then, you know, they eventually break away. So I like, you know, that idea of how the frame can work with what's happening in the movement in the foreground. So I think that was one idea where location worked really well with whatever the theme was.
Yeah. And then, so then, on the day of production, are there any tools that you always bring with you? Whether that be like a monitor that you always use for exposure, are there certain tools that you always bring no matter where you go?
So I had so this was my first time using a wireless system for a director's monitor, which was key because having a director who is on this level of visual thinking as you being able and having them being able to see what you're filming, as well as that director respects what your decision is too. That's a very interesting dynamic. So we were able to use I used the SWIT monitors, a hybrid monitor, which is clutch actually. I think even though I'm not a huge fan of the build quality of that monitor, but the fact that it's 3,000 nits, and we've been filming in bright daylight most of the time anyway, like that helps so much with critical focus. So I think that's definitely something that's going to be in my toolkit, what has been in my toolkit for this whole year really. A high bright monitor. Unfortunately, she was using like the Ninja V, which is not that bright. Outdoors it's 1,000 nits, not that bright, but she was able to kind of manage because she kind of huddled over the screen to see what's going on. And in order to do that, we used the Vax's Atom 500s. And those are good. I think those are a great budget option for and luckily like Vax's did reach out to me for a try. I'm like, hey, yeah, because I've been wanting to try some type of wireless system. So they reached out to me and said, hey, just try it out and then give us your thoughts and whatnot. So I have a review coming up later on about that. But that system was great because it was just an easy hookup, put the battery in, and they just connect. Like they find it, they find each other. And it takes about like 20-ish seconds. So I make sure that's up and running before we start filming, obviously. And the distance, you know, we're not, she's not that far from me, but the connection stays strong. And what was another thing? No, yeah, and those are probably like the two. Oh, and of course my lenses. We're shooting all of this on the SLR Magic APO micro prime. So I have the 25 and the 50, and I have the Z Cam S6, and I've been filming everything in open gate, and I love shooting in open gate. Man, that's all I wanted to do in that camera, and that's all I've been doing. But yeah, the key things that definitely in a shoot like this where we're outdoors during the summer, high bright monitor, wireless system for sure. And that's with any camera, but those are probably the two things. Oh, and also my matte box. I use the Wooden Camera Zip Matte Box Pro and the Dreamfix filter. And I like that filter because it doesn't raise your blacks as much as the Black Pro Mist does. So you won't get so much of a washed out look, only in like direct light. As soon if you get a direct light in there, yeah, it kind of blooms really quick. But if you're just pointing at a scene where the light's coming from, you know, side light or something, it just lifts a tiny bit and gives a little more highlight roll off. So I like having at least those tools on set for sure.
And how are you judging exposure when you're on set? Like, are you kind of just look at the screen and looks good, or are you like a false
No,
color
like,
guy, or?
yeah, so I'm a false color and waveform at waves. Waveform. With the Z Cam, it was funny venturing into the Z Cam world. There was so many things like, oh, you have to expose like this, you have to expose like that, or if you go too underexposed, you're gonna have terrible day. It was just so many things to kind of worry about. So I was like, let me just shut that out real quick and let me see where, because we know how to expose, right? So let me just like get the camera and then do some tests and see where I like where it hits. And there's a lot of latitude. Like I was exposing probably like a stop above or so, and it gave me a lot of range to mess with. I don't like using their LUTs, even though they recommend it. I've noticed that I've just kind of once I shoot in Z Log 2, I'll you know bring down my contrast, add whatever I need to add, and then polish it up afterwards. But yeah, I use false color because the skin tones on the Z Cam, if you do miss it, it does get a little wonky. So I make sure that's nailed. I bring a gray card with me too to get white balance because now in the world of no B-roll, because before I did get lazy not worrying about my white balance because that can be changed because that was metadata. I have a gray card and make sure I just quickly custom white balance where I'm at and then just kind of run from there.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think having like a gray card or a little
But as I have one too from X-Rite, the little color, the passport, color checker passport with the colors. Yeah. And yeah, it's been great.
I need to laminate this thing. This is what I use.
Ah, there you go. Yeah. Yeah. If it works, you know,
it works.
Yeah. And then how do you choose, like, you know, with the scenes when you were filming, the day exterior is obviously, you know, you're under the mercy of Mother Nature, you know, how does that process look like when you compare it to, say like an in theater shoot, you know, where you can actually use fixtures and lights. What sort of goes through your process as far as, you know, what time of day do we need to shoot this, or how long do we have to wait until we can shoot?
That was a little tricky. I'm open to shooting any time of the day, because I feel like light, obviously different lights tell a different story or tell different moods, not so much the story. And so, for instance, there are some things that we knew exactly what we wanted. We wanted some evening shots. And so that's going to be like golden hour time, easy, right? Kind of is what it is. With a different scenario, I wanted to play with hard light. And going back to the shoot we did with the telephone pole wires in the background and stuff, I wanted to play with hard light because I feel like I wanted that contrast, that just stark light and shadow, right? It's very distinct. There's nothing really soft about it. It's very just hard. It's harsh. So going through those different, you know, thoughts of what we wanted to feel like this was a range of time too. So if we shot everything in golden hour, it's going to feel like the same day. And we wanted something where that's how you can take somebody on a journey to different times, to different times of light, types of light too. So we still don't know how long this film's going to be. We've just been just filming and collecting and then kind of putting, piecing things together. So it's kind of open in that sense, but I'm open to like, let's shoot early in the morning. Let's shoot midday. Let's shoot in the evening. We just shot in a theater this past weekend. And that was really cool. So that's going to kind of take things out of our element too. So it's just different. We wanted a mix of different venues for sure. Only thing we probably won't shoot is cloudy. That's probably one we won't shoot. Yeah.
And with the theater shoot, were there any specific lights that you knew you wanted to use, or were you actually using some of like the stage lights that they had there, or a mixture of?
So we wanted to use stage lights. And when I got there, I just quickly looked around to see, okay, where's a spotlight? Because I wanted a backlight for sure. And then what can I use for fill? And then they had a top light. I'm like, that'd be kind of interesting. And normally a lot of people would stay away from top lights because it creates those harsh shadows underneath. But having those three combinations of lights, having a top light, back light, and then in the fill, made for this drama. And we wanted that space to feel like a void. And it was actually very small. So it made it very difficult because the seats are quite close. So I stayed low and away most of the time, and that allowed me to get, one, my exposure. I exposed for the person, obviously, and that top light helped to create a spotlight. And so whatever was in the background fell away to black, and we wanted that void feeling. So we kind of used that space and those lights to our advantage in that case. And I just avoided trying to make full 360s. I made enough where I know in post, I can kind of just probably crop out and then add black to get rid of whatever I don't want. But yeah, that was, cause I don't have I don't own a lot of lights either. I only have the 120D that's behind me right now. And I do need to invest in lights, but if I can rent, I rent. Our budget, she didn't have a huge budget anyway. So it's like, okay, well, I know how to manipulate light, natural light if I can, especially like theater light. That's probably the easiest thing to manipulate because you're like, I want this on, that on, this on, and then turn everything else off, right? So yeah
that's awesome, man. Yeah, it feels like with gear is always a hot topic, you know, because there's like lights, there's cameras, there's lenses, there's everything that goes into making and crafting the visuals. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, with so much gear available, it's good and bad, because at least it's good because you have so many options. And I feel like it could also be a little bad, because then you have too many options. You're like, which one?
If you're indecisive, yeah, doesn't help.
Yeah, it's like, which one should I use? Because there's like so many lights now, you know, at different price points and all that, you know.
Yeah.
But moving forward for the rest of the year, because we're already in
July.
About to end July. Exactly. About to end July, going into August. What's the rest of the year looking like for you? With everything from the work from the university, and also with the freelance stuff.
University work. I have several projects that I'm in the middle of right now, like a campus safety project, some other stuff. Where there's this campaign that we're calling the HEAR campaign. It's the campaign that's going to be ushering in the students back once they come back, I think next week, start coming back in phases next week. And so we're making video content for that. That's been keeping us busy as well. So in a handful, I'm dealing with like 12 or 13 projects right here, maybe roughly. And then with what I'm doing, so we're wrapping up, we just finished, I'm doing a documentary as well as the dance film, and I'm doing an editing project as well and some other little things. But the two big things is the dance film and the documentary. The doc, we just finished wrapping up interviews, on camera interviews, and we're going to do some like Zoom interviews later on. But this week we're going to take a break and do some transcoding and kind of get the script tightened up a little bit better. We'll get the interviews tightened up so we can see where the story is leading. And then, after that, we're doing some B-roll stuff the following week. And then once that's all done, I'm going to be grinding editing for the next about 2.5 months. it's kind of a fast turnaround, but I'm trying to do as much prepping as I can already. So I brought in the interviews. I'm trying to get a look. So I'm just dialing some color grades real quick just to see how it feels and share with the director. And if that's the look we want, we're going to kind of go on from there. It's funny, I'm gonna segue real quick. When I listen to other filmmakers, especially like from Ari and Cook, when they do those interviews and stuff, they always talk about how like they plan so far ahead. And I'm like, how do you do that? Cause like sometimes when it was at Honey Boy, I think, I was listening to the DP, and they already created a LUT that they were going to use for the set and somewhat for finishing. They're gonna tweak it obviously later. But like, I haven't gotten to that point where I can say, yeah, I'm gonna just use this LUT and go from there. And yeah, I'm still learning all the different types of the use cases for lookup tables, because, you know, you can just throw in a regular Rec 709 so you can kind of see what the image looks like. Sometimes I just look at log. I don't mind looking at log. I kind of understand what's gonna be contrast, what's gonna be highlights. I know that based on what I'm seeing in log. So I don't know about you, but like, do you customize a specific LUT for you that you know you're going to use for this project, or is it kind of like after the fact?
I used to try that because working with different cameras and for different projects, when we're renting out like a C100, and then the next one's like an FS5, and then the next one is like a Red, and then I was using one of my own cameras. And then actually what I do now is I just have a standard LUT that I use. That's from Film Convert. So mm-hmm. I actually use that just to monitor stuff. That's all I use it for. As I feel like it's so far it's gotten me the look that I need in camera. And mm-hmm. then for when I'm color grading things, then I typically just tweak a couple of things and then I'm good. Unless it's like an interview, then I'll do qualifiers for skin tones and stuff like that. But yeah, I pretty much don't really use LUTs, because a lot of times when I am using a LUT, I have to do stuff to it anyways.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah.
I tend to just skip the LUT unless it's something fast.
Yeah.
Then I will use the LUT and just get it out. But yeah, like I do use a monitoring LUT that I use on my small HD just to kind of gauge exposure and kind of see where things are clipping, or if things are going to clip, seeing kind of like what the colors are like. But yeah, LUTs are useful. I'll say that. And then sometimes, you know, LUTs can be kind of like you got to do more work after the LUT or before the LUT. And it's like, kind of just want to take that part out. With with the projects that you do, whether that be like for like the whether that be for university or for your own projects, do you kind of feel like for the most part it's still the whole visuals are still pretty much like very consistent with what you do, or do you feel like every project is really different?
Oh, I feel like every project is really different. Well, the consistent thing with, I haven't really found a space in the, sorry, in the corporate world where I can be like, oh, I want it to look like this, this and that. Cause sometimes once it goes through the chain of like people's opinions and stuff, it changes. So I kind of just not, I don't really step into that realm unless they say, hey, do whatever you want. And then we'll kind of go with it when there's less voices, less cooks in the kitchen. Right. With my stuff, it does vary from time to time, but I am trying to funnel in a process of what my what the feeling is. And so that's kind of hard to do because every story is different, and so you don't have to, I don't want to bottleneck every story, right? So for instance, like Images of a Black Man, that little short I did, I knew I wanted black and white, just because I was influenced by, I have this huge freedom book about slavery in America, heavily influenced by that, and obviously the different scenes that have been kind of repeated in media for the last decade or more. Well, really, you know, off time, but like the last decade for sure, that I've been aware of it and stuff. So that had a different look. The music video I did has a different look in terms of that video. But the look is definitely about, you know, what does the story need? What's the feeling that I'm trying to convey? And then, sure, I have a process of how I want to get to that point, but the look of it is going to be slightly different. And when I the real reason why I mentioned about LUTs is because, if you buy somebody else's LUT and you try to apply it to everything, yeah, that gets a little wonky. I'm trying to create my own, not to even sell, but like, this is what I know this is going to look like. This is what I want to expose for. Yeah. So that's like, LUTs are used that way to, you know, get reference. But I never done anything on the beginning versus the doing it towards the end. This is weird, but yeah.
Yeah, no, actually, so going back, like the only LUT I guess you could say that I do use is, I've been using it for so long, but it's from Red Giant, you know, the company Red Giant. So they have this tool called Magic Bullet Looks.
Magic Bullet. Oh,
yeah. Magic Bullet Looks, which I don't think they've actually updated it in like 2 years or something like that, or 3 years. But the only reason why I use it is because it's like a panel that provides film stocks, just like Film Convert. It actually gets you, they have options for like the actual film negative you can choose from and the actual film print. So it's almost like you're actually, it would be like if you're shooting on film, because you can actually choose which negative you want to use. You can choose how much intensity you want from the actual negative, as well as the film print. And that's pretty much the only thing that I use after I do just basic color correction. I white balance things. Yeah. Then I use Magic Bullet Looks to apply the film stock that I typically use, which is a Kodak film stock.
I have Film Convert too. So, cause I love the look of Kodak. Did you follow their Instagram?
No, I haven't. Film Convert or Kodak?
Oh, no, Kodak. Their cinema Instagram. It's so nice, man. I love Kodak colors.
Yeah, there's Kodak one
that, Fuji, yeah.
Yeah, the one I've been using for a while now, probably for the last year and a half or so, what is it? 5219. It's a Kodak tungsten stock. So it's like 500 ASA tungsten. I think it's a 500 ASA tungsten stock, but some of my favorite films were shot using that film stock, and I was like, that's why I like it, because it looks it just looks really good, you know. That's the only thing that I really use, and I've used it on everything from the Black Magics to the Reds to the FS7 that I have now, and it's just a very it's a very pleasing film stock. I like I feel like we're seeing less of that in the,
I guess so, yeah.
In the normal space. Yeah, and I think now it's just...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think now I mean, there are obviously still are LUTs that are kind of being pumped out, but I feel like people are using more of like specific creator LUTs than they are using like just origin TL LUTs all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, but man, you know, do you have any advice for people that are wanting to get into filmmaking? Maybe they're in a similar situation where like they're starting off a corporate job or they're working for a university, and maybe they also want to do their own production company or freelance stuff. Do you have any advice for those people?
Yeah, do your best to try to balance both, because unless you're like someone who's super, super driven and hungry to drop, you know, your corporate stuff to go completely freelance, all power to you. But if you're still unsure and you know you want to do creative work outside of this, you can do both. You just got to figure out what is the best way to balance it, because sometimes, because you got to eat. Like you gotta provide for yourself. So I think that's one thing I had to struggle with. Like, should I just like drop this job and then go completely freelance? And at the time living in Miami, it was not cheap. So even though I was getting little jobs here and there, it wasn't going to like sustain me, right? So if you gotta really look at it financially too. It's like, does this make sense? And can you manage both? If you can manage both, do it as long as you can. And then as you see your freelance work kind of just, you know, outgrow what you're doing at whatever job you're at, then that's the time to kind of realize like, hey, I can make this switch. Try not to let your freelance stuff kind of spill over to your 9-to-5, because in a way you got to kind of protect that. That's, you're bounded by a contract. You're bounded by these obligations financially that they're going to pay you this amount because you're going to work these amount of hours. If those start to clash, then you got to really look at it at a critical way. It's like, what am I actually doing? Because you don't want to burn bridges, and you don't want to let outside work burn those bridges. Because sometimes when you leave that job, those people can still recommend you to do other things outside of that, and that's what you want to have, at least have that relationship if you do leave. So that's what I would say. And then, you know, even though you and I, we talk about gear a lot too, I talk about gear a lot. it's not the end all be all. Like if you have the core fundamentals of storytelling, lighting, that will get you a very long way, because people want stories more than like corporations and small businesses. They want to hire you because you're able to tell their story well. No camera can tell a story. Use the camera to tell a story. That's what I would say.
Yeah, sound advice, man. Sound advice from a sound person, man.
I sound like an old man.
Well, hey, Josh, where can people find you?
Sure. Joshua Martin Studios is the, www.joshuamartinstudios is my website. But my Instagram handle is Joshua Martin Studios. YouTube is Joshua Martin Studios. And Twitter is a little janky, but you can find that through the other outlets. So
awesome, man. Well, I'm a big fan of the work. Every time I see it, I always say like, that's Joshua's work, you know? I
appreciate it.
And always love the content that you're putting out, kind of bringing really good value to filmmakers and aspiring storytellers trying to get into the whole realm of filmmaking and storytelling, man. Really appreciate the time, man.
I'm happy that we're able to talk again. I really appreciate what you're doing too, because you're staying consistent, bro, and I've always admired that. So
it's easier said than done. I'll say that, because sometimes it's just like, yeah, I don't want to film shit right now. I'm done. Yeah. I'm done.
I totally get
I'm deactivating my YouTube channel. I'm done.
Once again, special thanks to Joshua Martin for coming on to the podcast. Hope you guys were able to take away certain things that Josh talked about as far as kind of just balancing life, or balancing like the corporate client work and also the freelance work, and also some of the tools that he uses in his day-to-day work that helps him get the images that he likes. And maybe it inspires you to look at those same types of tools for your work. All right, that is it for this episode. I will catch you guys in the next podcast episode.